Warren Buffett, BlackRock, and other institutional players dominate investments in commercial aviation. Why? Because it's one of the most profitable and predictable alternative assets that exists. And it's not tied to other markets, such as real estate and the stock market. Is it safe? Well, imagine triple net leases to the likes of American Airlines and British Airways. Income is contractual and guaranteed by some of the biggest named airlines in the world. That's why this kind of investment was never available to the ordinary accredited investor. That is until now. Visit accesswealthaviation.com and check it out for yourself. Invest in an institutional team with over 200 plus years of combined investment experience in the aviation sector. Conservative investing with double-digit returns and tax advantages. That's accesswealthaviation.com, accesswealthaviation.com.
You are listening to the Wealth Formula Podcast with Buck Joffrey. Get ready to change your life.
Welcome, everybody. This is Buck Joffrey with the Wealth Formula Podcast coming to you from Montecito, California. Boy, I have barely been here this summer, man, I got to tell you, which is like, it's good. I got to travel a lot, but it's also exhausting. Been all over the place, was traveling around for a few weeks in North Carolina and Texas, and then went to Europe for a few weeks, and then came back and went to Chicago. Man, oh man, feeling a little crazy. So it's time to get grounded. School's about to start. Back to business, right? Anyway, today we're going to do an Ask Buck episode. Now, this is long overdue, I know. And so some of these questions are actually even a little old. If you want to submit any questions to the shows, go to wealthformula.com. Wealthformula.com, of course, is the place where you can get access to a number of the resources that are not available just by listening to the program, including signing up for our various lists, such as our Investor Club list. And also, if you're really interested in sort of joining the community at large with an ongoing discussion, you know, consider joining Wealth Formula Network. You can find out more information at wealthformularoadmap.com. And basically, it starts out with a course, but it ends up kind of morphing into a community where, you know, you have online communications via Facebook, but also we have a bi-weekly Zoom call. And actually, it's even more than bi-weekly now because we've added an occasional crypto call. Or we should call it maybe crypto and alternative assets. So last week we even started talking about, oh man, like watches and cars and stuff like that. Anyway, check that out at wealthformularoadmap.com. So when we come back, I'm going to start probably a series of multiple Ask Buck shows. There's lots of questions.
Worried about saving too little too late for retirement? The Wealth Accelerator may be exactly what you need. With the help of some of the oldest and most reliable insurance companies in the country, Wealth Accelerator allows you to take most of the upside of any good year in the stock market and use bank loans to magnify those returns significantly. And what if the stock market has a bad year? No need to fear. Wealth Accelerator is engineered so you don't participate in the losses of the market, no matter how bad of a year it is. Sounds too good to be true, right? But it's not. It's simply the same financial engineering that the ultra wealthy have been doing for years. Now it's your turn. Check it out for yourself by going to wealthformulabanking.com. Again, that's wealthformulabanking.com.
Self-storage is a necessary evil. It's where you keep your stuff and forget about it. No wonder this stuff is so profitable and recession-resistant. The Wealth Formula community, well, we've benefited from that. We've made lots of money in this space with Reliant Real Estate, one of the largest self-storage companies in the country. With an average investor internal rate of return of almost 34%, with hold times just over 3.5 years, these guys know what the meaning of velocity of money is. If you're an accredited investor, make sure to check out what they're up to right now at ReliantFund4.com. Again, that's ReliantFund4.com. Welcome back to the show, everyone. Of course, this is, again, Ask Buck. These questions have been accumulating probably since like May or so. By the way, if you want to, again, add some questions, go to wealthformula.com. You'll see the Ask Buck button, and you can actually record your question, which is generally what I prefer because I think it's more fun that way. But if you want to, you can just, you know, write a question as well, and I'm happy to address that as well. Anyway, let's start with the recorded questions again, because that's what I generally like better. So let's get through those first, and let's start now.
Hi, Buck. Please tell us your general opinion about investing in opportunity zones, and please tell us whether you would ever consider creating an opportunity zone fund that we can invest in. Thanks, Buck.
Well, that's it's an interesting question. So let's start out with what exactly are our opportunity zones. So opportunity zones are essentially, you know, they're an economic development tool that allows people to invest in distressed areas in the United States. And it could be for real estate, but it can also be for businesses and stuff like that. The idea is to spur economic growth, job creation in low-income communities, and at the same time provide tax benefits to investors to encourage this whole thing. So these funds are appealing potentially to investors because investing in them can either potentially defer or eliminate capital gains taxes of all kinds. So investors, basically what you can do is you can place existing assets with accumulated capital gains into these funds, right? And those existing capital gains are then not taxed until either the end of 2026 or when the asset disposition occurs. So for capital gains placed in opportunity funds for at least 5 years, investors get a jump up in basis of 10%, which means basically, okay, you pay capital gains on 10% less, essentially. And if you're invested for at least 7 years, the investor's basis jumps up by 15%, and all that's fine. But the big thing is, for investments held for at least 10 years, investors pay no taxes on the capital gains produced through their investment in opportunity funds. So that all sounds, you know, that sounds great, right? It sounds like a not a bad deal at all. But especially, you know, if you have to pay no capital gains on profits after a decade. So yeah, initially when this came out, everybody was super excited about it. Here's the problem, in my view, my opinion. First of all, you know, rehabilitation of very downtrodden places is difficult in the first place, okay? Inherently, there's substantially more risk to these kinds of acquisitions than those in markets that are already emerging that we already know have got a lot of momentum behind them. So these are markets that, you know, really are kind of an absolute mess, and there's no reason necessarily to go in there thinking that it's going to turn around. So, you know, obviously in our group, we do a lot of this sort of value add stuff in communities. They're usually blue collar communities, but they're enraging markets. These are not enraging markets. That's why these are opportunity zones, right? So anyway, so that's one of the problems. Next, now, most operators in the real estate space that I've spoken to, including obviously our own operators through Western Wealth Capital and through Turo, but also, you know, operators like Kenny McElroy, we've discussed this. And, you know, from the syndicator's perspective, people are used to doing value add. These are not particularly appealing parameters that are set when you are involved with one of these in order to, you know, to make it count as an opportunity zone. And namely, one of the big issues, you know, outside of the fact that you're in these places that are hit or miss in the future, is the amount of capital expenditures required in these projects. It's really excessive. They want you to put a lot of money into these things, and it makes it, frankly, more difficult to make money in those. Another problem, the idea that you're investing in areas that are in need of economic stimulation might lead you to expect that, you know, you're going to get a discount compared to nicer areas, right? I mean, this makes sense. The place is downtrodden. Why would you, you know, Shouldn't it be at a discount? Well, the problem is that opportunity zones themselves, have essentially attracted a premium now. So now you've got a bunch of opportunity funds all trying to take advantage of an area, and it drives prices up. And of course, that affects your return because you're not buying things at a discount. You're buying them at a premium compared to where the market is now. So in effect, the benefits of the taxes have already been baked in on the purchase price. So again, I don't see a lot of value in this compared to the amount of risk. That's my concern. And I have yet to find an operator that I think I could do a good job, that can do a good job at making money for people on a consistent basis with this model. If we thought we could do it, we would do it, right? I mean, this is value add stuff. And if we thought it was really useful and that investors could make a lot of money doing it, we'd be doing it, but we're not. Does that mean that we'll never do it? I don't know. It doesn't. But right now it's not something that we think is necessarily the best way to go. You can always, find someone who says they're going to make you money, but in reality, in this space too, again, because it's attracting a lot of money from the retail space, there's a lot of charlatans you got to be careful of. My last thought on this is that, listen, locking away profits for 10 years in hopes of not paying taxes, I don't know if it makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, that's a tremendous amount of risk, especially if this is a great big capital gain or liquidity event. I don't know if I want to take that kind of risk. And in terms of, especially right now with other opportunities in place, for example, if your capital gains were from property, from real estate, I mean, you could reinvest that and use bonus depreciation. And in many cases, bonus depreciation is actually going to be a better deal for people than even doing a 1031 exchange. And it's 100% bonus depreciation this year. Next year it'll decrease down to 80%, and then another 20% after that. But there's still a significant opportunity, to make money rapidly. I mean, even without this kind of opportunity zone thing, right? So say you did your, bonus depreciation for capital gains on real estate, and now you didn't pay taxes on that. And then, our divestments, as you probably know, typically in multifamily real estate specifically, are yielding over 30% annualized returns in general. So which means you're doubling your money in every 3 years. So what's the point of locking up for 10 years and not getting any benefit at all? Okay, so that's my opinion. More importantly, I guess the bottom line is we're doing assets that are in really good markets that we already know that creates a substantial risk mitigation. So most of my syndicator colleagues do not think it's worthwhile as an endeavor from the operations side. Anyway, good luck to you. Hopefully that helps with your analysis of the situation, but that's mine. Now, I think this question might be from the same person. Here's another one.
Hi, Buck. I was hoping you could give me a clear understanding about whether 100% of the losses I will see on the K-1s from my Western Wealth investments from bonus depreciation this year can be used to reduce the capital gains that I will see on the stocks that I am selling this year. Or do these types of gains and losses reside in separate buckets for some specific tax reason? I'm not a real estate professional with any gains from real estate sales, so that's why I'm asking the question. Thanks a lot, Buck.
So yeah, you're not a real estate professional, and as a reminder, I'm not a CPA because I don't want to get myself in trouble. So anything I tell you is from my own, what I've heard. I'm just a guy who knows a guy, right? So anyway, my general understanding is that there is, of course, a difference between various types of income, okay? Your gains from stocks would be considered portfolio income. And so portfolio income is a different kind of income than real estate. So therefore, profits from portfolio income cannot be offset by the losses vis-a-vis depreciation on real property, right? That sort of sucks because, as you, I'm sure you know, the bonus depreciation does not work against active ordinary income either, right? So basically, you've got, you know, this IRS kind of barricade of losses, and there's not much we can do about it without changing legislation. So now, bonus depreciation from real estate is there primarily to allow you to use against other passive sources of income. So it might not just be real estate, right? I mean, that's certainly one way. You got passive, if you have passive capital gains from real estate, the idea would be that you could offset that by reinvesting that in something else, and then getting the depreciation on that. Now, I can tell you that I'm just about to do that because I finally sold my house that is in Chicago and that I was renting out for a while. And now I've got, you know, I think I've got a few hundred thousand dollars of recapture because I did a cost segregation analysis. And then I have, you know, another few hundred thousand dollars of profit. And then what's going to happen is if I invest that and leverage it, I should be able to knock out all of the recapture and the capital gains through the passive losses that would come from the acquisition using bonus depreciation and after cost segregation analysis. By the way, if this discussion of bonus depreciation and all that business is confusing, go back to one of our last Ask Buck shows because we talk about this all of the time. So anyway, again, I'm not a tax professional. However, here's my understanding. So bonus depreciation, if you get real estate, can offset, you know, all kinds of passive ordinary income that's not portfolio income. So property, there's a number of people in our group, in our network, who have ownership of businesses that are passive, such as surgical centers, infusion centers. They're not involved in day-to-day activity. Therefore, these are considered passive endeavors, and therefore, the depreciation can be from real estate can be used to offset. Again, because of these businesses, this income is ordinary income, but it's passive. Therefore, that's why you can use, you know, bonus depreciation on that. Bottom line, though, going back to your original question in your case, I wish it were not the case, but I don't think it's going to work for you because you've got portfolio capital gains. And that's one of the, another reason that, you know, I'm not a big fan of stocks in general myself. So you just don't have the tax benefits that you do in real estate. Now, one last thing, of course, I should add, and again, I'm not a CPA, but I'll add one more element here, again, that if you are a real estate professional, one of the benefits is, yes, you could take your losses from the depreciation and offset it against any kind of income. That's my understanding. And as a real estate professional, I've seen this firsthand. But anyway, that's it for that question. Thanks for asking. All right, next question.
Hey, Buck, thanks for all that you do. My question is, when investing as an LP into a deal, is the time the money is spent sitting in a fund account before and after the deal is closed or sold taken into account when determining the return on investment? And if not, what would you say is a typical amount of time to consider when factoring in the time the money sits in a fund account before a deal is closed or after a deal is sold? Thank you for your time and expertise.
So this is a really good question because it addresses one of the reasons that I don't like real estate funds as a general rule. And that's why in our investor club, you almost never see them. Why? Well, let's say someone wants to start a $100 million blind fund and acquire a bunch of real estate through it. Okay, let's just say that. And you get so they get their money raised. And then what? That's when you go out and look for properties to buy. Now, there are certainly been times in the last few years where it would be relatively easy to deploy that much capital if you had access to deal flow, but it's not always the case. I mean, look at right now. What if you just started a $100 million fund 3 months ago? You know, opportunities right now are sparse, and you would be forced therefore to buy properties that just so that you're not losing money by holding on to cash. you'd be forced to buy properties that you might not otherwise want to buy. You know, it really just comes down to what I would call the efficiency of capital. I mean, the way I prefer to do things, you have a specific asset, big apartment building, whatever, you know exactly how much money you need to acquire, and you know generally the approximately the amount of capital expenditures you'd like to add to the capital raise, and you're not raising very much more than that, if any. And the fact that you don't have very much dead money sitting there waiting to deploy maximizes the returns for investors. That's, you know, it's just basic math, right? I mean, you got $100 million and you're sitting on $50 million, and that $50 million is just losing buying power, I mean, over time. Anyway, funds always have a lot of money sitting around too. And you know, that's, again, it's just not efficient. It's not a really good way to make money, in my opinion. Of course, even with specific assets, the way that we do it, you have an apartment building. Typically, with every opportunity, the operator is going to give you an idea when the closing is, and it's typically going to be within a couple weeks of the funding deadline. So if you are funding, you know, shortly before the deadline, you know, you probably have a tack on about 2 to 3 weeks until the closing. So that's, you know, dead time. And then conservatively, you know, when there's a disposition, you're selling the, when the property is getting sold, you may not get your money, I would say an average of about 3 to 4 weeks after the closing of the real estate project, after disposition. So all in all, I mean, you're looking at probably, you know, a month and a half, 2 months of additional hold time. Now, of course, I think the what you referenced earlier, you're wondering, you know, what numbers the operators are showing you. What they're really showing you is at the project level, right? I mean, returns are calculated from the day you close to the day when you sell the property. And, you know, but you're right. You've added a couple extra months, and hopefully it doesn't make a big difference in term, and you've made a bunch of money. But that extra hold time does technically reduce the return as a function of time. And again, in the case of specific assets, I think the math, if it were me, I'd probably just tack on a couple extra months if you really want to try to figure out, you know, how much effect that has on your return. Good question, though. All right, let's see.
Hey, Buck, this is Eben from San Luis Obispo, California. I'm wondering if rising mortgage rates will make it so that multifamily operators will be less likely to do a refinance. Thank you.
Yeah, Eben, absolutely. I think that's absolutely the case. So in our portfolio, we have a number of properties that we were planning on doing a refi this year that now we're really not so sure about that, and we're just now holding on. The reason, of course, is that rising interest rates mean higher mortgage payments, as most of these loans and commercial real estate are floating. And then refinancing will essentially, what that does is it takes out equity, and then it'll reduce the overall net income of a property. And that's really not what you want to do in a volatile rate situation like we're in right now. Now, the good news for our investors, again, is, you know, I just bring this because I know there's a bunch of people in this kind, in lots of real estate right now in our investor group. The good news for our investors, these properties are doing really well. So we are actually more likely to, I would say, sell these properties earlier than a pro forma, than to refi, because I think that would be a less risky proposition. So what are we waiting for? If we think it might be a good idea to sell, well, part of the problem is that the lending markets, I shouldn't say part of the problem, I would say the majority of the problem is the lending markets are volatile, right? Because of all this rate movement, lenders have gotten very conservative with both leverage, Fannie, Freddie, very, very poor leverage offered, and the spreads between SOFR, which is what replaced LIBOR, and the actual lending rate, those spreads have gone way up in the private lending market. So effectively, buyers are not lining up to buy right now. They are waiting. So to be a seller in this environment is a little tricky, right? The number of active buyers has easily been reduced tenfold in the last 6 months. And I'm talking about, you know, big institutions and family offices and stuff like that. They're just not buying. So if you want to maximize what you sell your property for, it may not be the best time to sell, right? You want a bunch of, you know, ravenous buyers out there to overbid, kind of like bring your own trailer, right? You ever been, you know, that's that car thing. You should check it out. It's kind of cool to see, but there's basically, you know, people have these vintage cars and they're really cool, but they always end up going for way over what they should because there's a lot of people looking at them. Anyway, I digress. Bottom line is, with our property that we have, we're not worried about losing anything. It's just a matter of time before lending markets stabilize. And when they do, everyone will go back to work and we'll start selling properties and consider refinances and all of that. Yeah, hopefully that answers your question, or at least kind of addresses something peripheral to it. Okay, I think this is the last one we will do today.
Hi, Buck. I'm curious to know what the current increase in interest rates will do to apartment syndications in terms of asset performance. I know a lot of operators forecast a refinance or even a lower interest rate when they initially do their pro forma. So I'd like to get your insight on this.
So yeah, this question again relates very much to the one before. I would just say again that the lending markets are really driving what's going on in real estate, in the real estate markets right now, especially, you know, in multifamily. That's what, you know, where we're focused. And again, that's why you're not seeing many refis and why you are seeing a bunch of transactions. However, again, I'll take this opportunity to emphasize that personally, I'm not worried. I'm not worried overall. And believe me, if this market was in trouble, I'd be very worried because I have, you know, the vast majority of my net worth, you know, bulldozed into these assets. So I'm not worried, especially for property that we have in our investor club portfolio, which is the stuff that I invest in. We are in the business of value add, and that's really, really important in this kind of environment. Our whole model is predicated on driving up rents, right? We're not a buy and hope model. We are focused all the time and driving up rents. And so interest rates are high right now, but that doesn't happen in a vacuum, right? They're high because inflation is high. And so interest rates are following that. But guess what? If inflation is high, we ramp up our rent even more than when inflation is not high, right? So we basically cancel that out. And that's why multifamily in the hands of competent operators is a hedge against inflation. Now, I do believe that there's a chance you're going to see some struggling properties that you're going to hear about. And I think that is going to happen because in reality, you know, there's a lot of syndicators in the last, you know, 6-7 years who hopped on board, and their approach has been relatively lazy, or, you know, just they're not really pushing rents. They're not creating value. And in the last several years, it's been very easy for people to make money by doing nothing but just holding on and waiting for, you know, and hoping for rents to go up and for people to bid higher because of lower cap rates. Well, that environment, it's just not there anymore. So for people who are buying, syndicators who've bought and who are not into the mindset of driving up rents, this could be a difficult time. And I think that is yet to be seen. I haven't heard of a lot of that kind of stuff happening yet, but I mean, that I wouldn't be surprised if you did see that. But again, the good news is this is what we're built for. Anyway, so let's take a break and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the show, everyone. Hope you enjoyed this session of Ask Buck. Of course, we'll have another one next week. And then I don't know how many weeks in a row we'll have them. We have a lot of questions. As a reminder, if you want to add to that load of questions, go to wealthformula.com. I prefer to hear your voice, but if you're shy, just write it down. and I'll get to it as well. Try not to be too specific about questions with regard to various investments and things like that, because I can't really answer them in public. So try to be somewhat general, even if it relates to something that you're invested in through the group. I also remind you that hopefully you got the save the date. Our next meetup is going to be in Dallas, October 7th and 8th. It should be really interesting. It's always a great time. People always come to these things, you know, and you learn something, but really it's a great opportunity to meet the Wealth Formula Network. Make sure to save the date, and you should hopefully very shortly, if you have not already seen an opportunity to sign up and register for that event. We only take about 100 people in each event, because try to keep it small. So anyway, look out for that. Otherwise, that's it for me this week on Wealth Formula Podcast. This is Buck Joffrey signing off.
Thank you for listening to the Wealth Formula Podcast. Visit us on the web at wealthformula.com. The information contained in this podcast are opinions, not fact. As always, consult your own financial team before making any investment. See you next time.
Buck Joffrey here from Sapio with Buck Joffrey. Aging might become reversible over the next 10 to 20 years. It's already being done in lab animals, so it's just a matter of time. Our challenge? To be healthy enough for when that time comes. As a former scientist and surgeon myself, my goal is to figure out how to do that and to share it with you. I wrote a book called Living Longer for Busy People that you can download for free at sapiopodcast.com. You'll be amazed at just how a few daily adjustments can add years of a healthy life for you. Again, download it for free, sapiopodcast.com.